This is Bea Arthur, and you're listening to the Be the Change podcast, sponsored by Sonos. Welcome back, everybody, to Be the Change. My name is Bea, and I want to change your life. Today, I'm going to help out all my Virgo sisters and brothers and everything in between, and anybody else who might suffer with the secret success of being a perfectionist, secret success and struggle of being perfectionist. Today, I have one of my favorite therapists, one of my favorite people, and one of the thought leaders on the concept of perfectionism in high-performing individuals, Ms. Megan Bruno.
Thanks for having me, Bea.
Welcome to the show, ho. Yeah. And that's spelled H-E-A-U-X because my sis is also from Canada, right?
Indeed,
like
I am.
Cousins with the prime minister?
Yeah, basically.
Trudeau, Bruno.
We're like best friends.
This is MeganBruno.com. We're going to do promotion. But this is literally one of my favorite therapists. I'm so glad to have you on the show. I love you so much. Please tell the audience why I love you so much. Who are you? What do you do?
Okay, cool. So I'm Megan Bruno. I'm a therapist, an executive coach,
and my
speaker,
friend.
Writer, mm-hmm. Instagrammer, whatever, that kind of thing. And yes, most importantly, friend of Bea's. And I specialize in perfectionism, as Bea said, which many of us don't fully understand what it is because it's sort of this like ambiguous term, and a lot of people think it means like, oh, I have to have everything at like right angles or like a really clean right. home or something like that. But you know, ultimately it's actually a fear of discomfort or an inability to deal with emotional discomfort and a way of avoiding that, really. So and underneath that, shame. Do you want me to be going into this already, or do you want me to say anything more about myself first?
No, I would love for you to first of all tell us about how you come to understood this process in your practice, because today's episode is called Perfect People Problems.
Totally.
And okay. A lot of people feel like they're falling short, and that's why they come to therapy.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The girl to do it. So what do you do?
So like many therapists, I came to this work because I struggled with it myself. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a label for it. I didn't know what it was that I was struggling with until I had my like, you know, white yoga girl breakdown and like
leave it on the mat.
Yeah, exactly. But basically I struggled for many years with eating disorders, with depression, with anxiety. And I didn't, I knew that something wasn't right because I was struggling with bulimia, and that's not really well, it is very common, but like it's something that you can't ignore. Whereas depression and anxiety, I didn't actually recognize that's what I was struggling with. I just thought that I was like, had an attitude and was really negative and liked Eminem a lot. Anyway, so for many, many years, I did everything that I could to avoid failure, discomfort, rejection, anxiety, sadness. And I only did things that I knew that I could succeed at. And that's like a huge part of perfectionism is avoidance. So I was kind of lying to myself. Like I was like, okay, like as long as I like do all these sorts of things and make sure that I'm really successful in these areas and like over prepare and feel a lot of anxiety and beat myself up a lot, like I'll feel like I'm enough and I can avoid pain. And
wow. That's exactly right.
Yeah. And
slow
like
down a little bit, because that's exactly right.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah. Sorry. I'm a fast talker.
No, so am I.
Okay. Yeah. People can like put this on like half.
We're
going to
do it on 2X.
Yeah, exactly. So really actually like with my eating disorder, that was like one of the main manifestations of my perfectionism. And the thing with perfectionism is it is basically this like belief that if you do everything perfectly and if you look perfect and if you act perfect, then you can avoid pain. And I'd grown up in a situation where I experienced a lot of pain in my family. And so I didn't, like, as a result, I didn't really have healthy coping mechanisms, hence, you know, eating disorders being my coping mechanisms. Mm-hmm. So what I did was, you know, if there was any place where I anticipated feeling pain, I would avoid that. And if I was feeling pain, I engaged in my disordered eating behaviors. And I also thought that if I were thin enough, like, this is the more cognitive piece, like, I thought if I were thin enough, then no one could hurt me, you know, like, nothing right. could hurt me. I would be okay. And so this went on for many, many years until actually, ironically, I was like finishing my master's in psychology.
That's always how it goes.
Yeah, exactly. And I felt like a major imposter because I was like really struggling at the time. And then, yes, I had like this sort of, whether it was like a divine intervention or whether it was just like a perfect storm of things happen, my world was turned completely upside down. A few things happened. One was I had so many over-exercising injuries from my eating disorders that my physical therapist was like, Megan, you cannot run anymore. You cannot work out. The only thing you can do is yoga. If you do any of those like more intense exercises, you will ruin your body and you'll never run again. And that really scared me because running was one of the ways that I like avoided and numbed my pain. because I didn't have the tools to deal with it. And we'll get into some of the tools to deal with perfectionism and our inner critic and that emotional pain and unrealistically high expectations and self-worth dependent on outcomes and achievements, which are all factors of perfectionism we'll get into. But ultimately I was like, okay, this is really freaking scary. So I didn't run anymore and I started going to yoga, which I hated. But it did force me to like slow down, attention to my body. And I started, you know, listening to some of the talks and whatnot that were coming along with the classes. And at the same time, I also, my boyfriend of 3 years, who I was totally convinced I was gonna like marry and we were gonna like move to the country and like, you know, have a couple kids and whatever. I was like 24, 25. He dumped me like out of the blue. He actually left me for someone else, which was my greatest fear because that was what happened with my parents and what I was trying to avoid my entire life. And it was when I was at like my lowest weight. And I was so confused because I was like, wait, like, no, this is a lie. I remember feeling resentful to the universe. I was like, what the fuck? Like,
your belief was that if you were skinny enough, nothing could hurt you.
Exactly. If I were thin, no one could hurt me, you know, and this is a huge part of
perfectionism. Value in the wrong place.
Exactly. So for people listening who can already begin to relate, maybe it's not thinness, but it's like, if I make enough money, no one can hurt me.
Right.
If I'm successful enough, no one can hurt me. You know, if I have enough friends, if I have enough Instagram followers.
So we say this a lot in therapy. When you think that way and that's your core belief and that motivates your thoughts, behaviors, and actions, your happiness becomes a moving target.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
Impossible. You set yourself up.
And you get a quick hit, like a fleeting hit of satisfaction. Okay, relief. But then the bar gets raised again. And so we live in a society where marketing and social media or media just in general, and really just like the cultural narrative that we see through Disney movies and fairy tales and stuff like that tells us that like, this is a life you're supposed to live. This is how life is supposed to be. And if you do all of these things, you can reach a place where you're happily ever after. And the reality is that happily ever after doesn't exist. None of us is invincible from frustration, hurt, grief, rejection, anxiety. Like, and so our job here is to not to learn how to avoid those feelings, but to learn how to be with them and to deal with them. So when that happened and I was dumped in, you know, out of nowhere, and I was in the most like excruciating pain of my life up until that point, at least, I was like, this is so fucked up. Like my entire, it's like the ground had been ripped out from underneath me. And so, ultimately perfectionism is a way of avoiding discomfort and, putting our self-worth into outcomes and achievements, you know, having these like unrealistically high, inflexible expectations for ourselves.
And how do you see, like, for example, with some of your clients, how, like, what is the pain that they come to you with?
So the thing is, because there's such a focus around like avoidance and numbing, because we don't want to feel discomfort, the way that perfectionism manifests is like really diverse. I mean, anything from somebody coming in with an addiction to a substance that they're using to numb, or like some other habit that's not serving for them, whether it's like, I don't know, like procrastination or, you know, finding themselves in like a Netflix binge or dating like excessively or,
That's true because we started the show saying like, it's different from OCD. It's not excessive compulsive disorder.
No.
It's a different thing, but it has similar features. The nature of busyness.
Totally.
Trying to control everything. Throwing a whole bunch of saying yes to everything.
Yeah.
Setting yourself up to be disappointed and then confirming your hidden belief that you're only going to disappoint people.
Totally.
It's like constant
and
cycle.
We often say there are three C's to perfectionism: comfort, certainty, and control. So seeking certainty, seeking comfort, seeking control, because again, underneath everything, a person believes I'm not resilient enough or I don't have the tools to deal with emotional pain. Or, you know, they might not actually recognize it as emotional pain, but I don't have the tools to deal with the unexpected. And so I have to orchestrate my life in a way that I can prepare and, you know, be totally in control all the time.
Yeah.
There are the different ways that it manifests, and there's the category of like numbing or reacting to whatever their pain is, and then there's a category of just like avoiding pain. So it's like living in a box. So I work with a lot of entrepreneurs, and for them it's like they're not taking risks, or they're not networking, they're not pitching, they're not like branding themselves or putting themselves out there if that would be helpful. They're not taking a risk. They're micromanaging their employees because they're not comfortable with letting go of control, or they're not comfortable with the uncertainty, or they're not comfortable with the potential of rejection or judgment or criticism.
And audience, I say this every time, when you have uncertainty, you will have anxiety.
Totally.
And those are the perfection panic attacks that we have. These are perfect people problems.
Yes, exactly.
Panic attacks, anxiety, restless nights, no matter doing everything and still not feeling like enough.
Totally. And a lot of that is related.
Oh, wait, let me say that again. Doing everything and still not feeling like you're doing enough.
Totally. And a lot of that is related to, so I mentioned four characteristics, critical inner voice, inability to deal with emotional discomfort, self-worth dependent on outcomes and achievements, and the final one is these unrealistically high inflexible expectations, which
is... I'm sorry, can you just say those again slowly?
Yes, yes, of course. Yeah. So I mentioned four characteristics that I have personally defined in like a decade of working with people who struggle with this. So the first one is that self-worth that's dependent on outcomes and achievements. So like what we mentioned before, it's like I am enough if... I'm thin, if I'm successful,
if I'm the CEO, finishing the marathon,
you know, but it's so fragile and precarious because it's not you're not seeing your value in like deeper morals and values.
It's conditional love.
Totally. Exactly.
It's conditional self-love.
That's exactly what it is. It's conditional self-love. And so, and oftentimes that is because we've internalized some kind of unconditional love that we experienced,
exactly,
which is related.
So everything we see in our adult lives is usually related to something that we learned in our childhood.
Yeah, totally.
And so if you saw conditional love, if you experienced that from your parents or peers, you will have the same relationship to yourself. And that's how we punish ourselves with perfectionism.
Exactly. And so that's where like that critical inner voice comes from, which is the second characteristic. Perfect. It's oftentimes an internalized, you know, caregiver or parent or sibling or the bully at school. And you know what? Sometimes it's none of those things. Mm. Sometimes it's just because our society's fucking
very
shaming.
Hard on us. Yes.
Exactly. And we are seeing, we're in it, especially as women, we are inundated with images and messages.
Do more, be more,
look better, you know, look different.
You're not enough. That's
you're not
the
enough.
Flip side.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's really like shame.
My inner critic is hard. My coach named her Stanky Anna because she has such a stank attitude.
Yeah.
I'm like, bust down, Stanky Anna.
Yeah.
I make her write me letters and shit. I'm like, why are you so mad at me? And it's me.
Totally. Yeah. No, it's really helpful to recognize that inner critic. And we can get into more of like the, you know, ways that we work with it. But unlike a lot of therapists who recommend like yelling at your inner critic and telling them to fuck off, like, I don't take that approach because I work with something called self-compassion, which is a really effective way of coping with perfectionism. And that's ultimately like thanking your critic because it was probably there to protect you at some point.
Right.
You know, if you're being bullied at school and you're harder on yourself first, like you're, you can protect yourself in some way, or you can prevent yourself from putting yourself into places of vulnerability. Or, you know, for me, I often use the example that like bulimia and like the self-loathing I endured for many years was protective because I didn't have any other ways of coping with my pain. And so the self-worth dependent on outcomes and achievements, the critical inner voice, the lack of coping skills or
healthy coping mechanisms.
Yeah, healthy coping mechanisms or ways of like emotionally regulating. So being able to be with discomfort and actually like sit with that and know what we need and respond in a healthy way. We tend to be more reactive. We tend to either, as I said, like really avoid those, avoid those situations, or we numb them. And they're all related, you see. So like part of the reason for that is because we're so hard on ourselves.
Right.
So if you can't be with your emotional discomfort and you're judging yourself for it and you're beating yourself up when you're already down, of course you're going to avoid that emotional discomfort. And then the final piece is these unrealistically high and flexible expectations. So if you can imagine what expectations you'd have for someone you love, if they were like sick or PMSing or they just broke up with their partner or they didn't sleep the night before, you'd probably adjust your expectations for them, you know. You might be, I mean, if I just like walked in and was like heartbroken or something, you'd probably be like, okay, like we're gonna record this girl, but like you're not gonna expect probably the same thing out of me that you might if I'd had like a good night's sleep the night before and wasn't trying to detox off coffee, which is what I'm trying to do right now. It's just the worst.
I can tell.
Yeah. Oh shit, my perfectionist.
I can tell. No, your content is breathing.
Yeah, okay. So you know, that's a huge part of it too, is that like these expectations are so high and unrealistic, so it causes so much anxiety.
Yeah.
Because really, if you think about it, like most of our discomfort comes from this disparity between expectation and reality. And when we have unrealistic expectations up here and we can't lessen that gap because we're not realistically going to meet them, this is anxiety. This is disappointment. This is shame. It's everything else in between. So they all kind of connect with each other. Mm-hmm. And that's essentially like what I've identified as the four qualities or the four characteristics that I work with people to help them overcome and change.
Amazing. Making the change, y'all. Well, hopefully our caller will either have one or all four of those characteristics. So before we help our guest with this issue of perfectionism in its many forms, just want to say, even though Megan and I are both therapists, this is not therapy. Me and Sonos don't have no money for you. Leave me alone.
Sign the waiver.
That's a disclaimer. Yeah. And I also say that in order to know a person's true self, you have to know their fake Insta. So caller, what's your Finsta?
It's Penny Imposter.
Ooh, I love that name. Imposter syndrome. Yeah. Definitely a direct reflection of poison perfectionism. Ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I mean, guys.
So how can we help you? How can we change your life?
So I've been listening to this and I was actually really surprised that y'all have me. I don't consider myself a perfectionist. No. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think of myself that way, but as I'm listening to you discuss it, I'm like, oh, wow, maybe I am, because I don't think, you know, when I think of someone who's a perfectionist, I think of someone who's actually like, you know, looks like they're perfectionist. Like they have their, you know, they're dressed well, they look, you know, they have money, that to me, a perfectionist is not
perfect.
It is not the pursuit of it. It is sort of where you are. So maybe I'm in pursuit of it, but I am not. I don't. So it's interesting to hear that is not really what it is. I've always, you know.
That's the gag, right? It's the moving carrot. It's the moving target. When you are a perfectionist, you will never feel perfect.
Totally. Well,
it is the pursuit.
I think it's such a misnomer.
That's so interesting.
It's chasing the dragon. It's like heroin.
And most perfectionists don't think they're perfectionists because they're like, I'm not perfect, because obviously they don't think they're perfect because they're chasing perfectionism thinking if they're perfect, they can avoid pain and they can get to that place where they're not feeling like what they're feeling anymore, where they believe they're finally enough.
Exactly. So that's narcissist thinks they're perfect.
Yeah.
Perfectionists are striving for that perfection.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I see. All right. Well, I know I'm not a narcissist because I'm too self-sacrificing to be a narcissist.
Well, tell us about this. What's your issue?
So my issue is, so the reason I call myself Penny Imposter, and it's very, it's just sort of like, I'm a writer and I have big time imposter syndrome. For example, you know, I have my publicist I share with a really famous writer named E.L. James. She wrote 50 Shades of Grey, which made its movies and sold like 100 million copies. I mean, it's, you know, a behemoth. And she's my publicist too. And I'm not even, you know, like 10% of that. I'm very, you know, I'm very young in my career, but I've managed to gain visibility that, you know, is just sort of outpaced where I should be. And it's because I've written a few books that have really have been popular, you know, it's been because of the books I've written and also some of the relationships I have. And I know for sure that, you know, people always respond well to my personality. You know, I mean, people tend to like me right away, and I feel as though, that's nice, but it's not what I want from them, you know? And I'm convinced though that I am not, it couldn't possibly be that they really, because, you know, my publicist, I think she just likes me and, you know, thinks I'm a good person and wants to promote me because of that. But I also know that, you know, like my rational brain knows that if she didn't think my books were good, she wouldn't, you know, wouldn't like you at all. That's right. Like, she's not in the business of she's in this business for promoting books and not people. But I still, like, always, I still, you know, I still, it's been we've been working together for
So what is your question?
So my question is, how do I, what are some ways I can combat this? Like, as I'm, you know, I'm sort of sunk in this, and I'm stuck here in this place where I feel a lack of, I feel as though they're going to find out that I'm not good enough. How do I cope with that?
Well, let me ask a question first before offering any suggestions, Penny. how do you think things would be different? Like, what would you notice about yourself? What would other people notice about you if this were to change and shift in the way you wanted it to?
I think I'd be making more money.
Okay, there it
really
is.
That's okay. It. That's it.
I'd be making more money.
I mean,
money.
That's it. I mean, I feel like that's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, I don't sell 100 million books.
Right.
I don't, you know, I don't, you know, I'm invited to events with people who are, you know, like international number one New York Times bestsellers. Mm-hmm. And then I'm there and I'm like, why am I here?
Right.
You know, no, for real. And I feel like everyone else is wondering that too, because I feel like everyone is like, who the hell is this bitch?
So I would be making more money.
No, you can cuss. I've been there.
I would be making more money because I would be doing what?
I'd be selling more books.
Right, but what would you be doing that would actually cause you to sell more books that you're not doing now as a result of
this? I don't know. I would just have a bigger readership. I mean, I think a bigger readership comes with time, and that's what these women have on me.
Right.
They have been doing this for like 10 years, right?
Yeah.
But for some reason, people associate me with them, and so whenever I'm there with them, I feel like they're like, who, you know, because someone will invite me, someone in that group will include me, and I don't know why, because when I get, you know, it's like I'm invited to participate in an anthology. Everyone else is a New York Times bestseller but me, but I was invited by the person.
You're still in the room where it happens.
Yeah, and are you still participating in that anthology?
Yes, and I did it, but I feel so, I'm so self-conscious. Right.
Of course.
That, and I feel like, I don't participate the way I should. I don't engage because I'm like,
okay,
you know, that's
helpful, Penny, right? What you just said right there, because that's what I want to hammer in on is like, what behaviorally do you believe you're holding yourself back from or not doing? Because you're saying I would sell more, but I want to know what that looks like. So you're saying I would participate more. So tell me, give me an example of like what that would look like, where you believe you're not participating because of this underconfidence and you would be participating if you didn't have this underconfidence or if you were more confident.
I mean, it's so whenever I have an opportunity, I do it, but it's like things like, you know, there are lots of like authors working collectives, right? They, you know, they form groups and we share information, we ask questions. And I never ask questions. I make so many mistakes because I'm afraid to even let them know I'm there.
Yeah. Right.
To ask, hey, does anyone have any experience doing this? Sometimes I'll get lucky and the question they're asking is exactly what I need to know.
Yes.
But sometimes
Yeah.
And so things like that, like I don't participate.
Great.
I have turned down some things. And I'm like, I have no business being there.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what?
So Penny, what would, if you were to imagine if you were to participate and things weren't to go as you'd hoped, like let's say that you did feel judged or you know, it was like, as you described, like a stupid question or something like that, what is the emotion that you believe you would experience or the emotions you'd experience if that were to happen that you're avoiding by not doing it?
Oh my God, humiliation, public humiliation.
Yeah, okay, cool. No, that's great. So humiliation, anything else?
No,
okay.
I think that's the thing. I don't want, you know, and negative attention, you know,
totally.
Dismissal or, you know, I have this very thing, this thing about, you know, you sort of only have one chance to make the right impression and like what it is. And so I'm very, you know, I don't want to make an impression until I have one to make. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just trying to lay low until I feel like I have the right to be there because I sort of match them in not just visibility, but also in the thing that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Results.
And absolutely. And that expectation that you have for yourself, like, I only have one chance to make an impression. Would you have that same expectation for someone like you loved or cared about, that they can only have one chance to make an impression?
No, of course not. No.
So a couple of things I'm noticing here, like that we touched on earlier. So the expectations piece. First, what I'm hearing is not only are you expecting yourself to not experience the discomfort of being still relatively like green, and as you described, like these people have time on you, right? So still learning at like the ropes and earning your stripes and stuff like that. So you're expecting yourself to be an expert when there are a lot of areas that you're still not an expert at, and you shouldn't be, because like it's like if you were to learn a sport, like if you were learning, I don't know, like baseball or something, you're not expected to play in the, I don't know why I chose baseball, I know nothing about baseball, what is it, the MLB? yes, you have had success and for like a good reason, clearly there's a lot of talent there, and in many ways like it's great that what you've experienced so far is because of the true nature of your work, not because of like kind of faking it till you make it, because there's not much faking it going on here. Like you're basically doing the opposite of that, right? You're hiding and you're keeping yourself small for understandable reasons. But what I'm hearing is, A, you're not giving yourself permission to be imperfect in this process. And on top of that, mm-hmm. you're actually, I hear another place where expectations come in that you're expecting yourself to be really confident. And, you know, this imposter syndrome is so common. I mean, like B was saying earlier, like you experience it, I experience it. And it's not necessarily that you need to eradicate it, but what we need to help you do is become aware of it and aware of where it's holding you back. So you can recognize right. when you're experiencing it and when you're thinking, oh, I don't want to voice my opinion in this, you know, writer's circle because I'm afraid of being humiliated. And then you can kind of be like, interesting, but I'm not taking a risk that could potentially advance my career. What happens if I do say something silly? Like, you know, can I come back from that? Mm-hmm. Do I have another opportunity to make a better impression? So you're able to like real time recognize where you're holding yourself back. And the other piece is that I do imagine there's a pretty strong critical inner voice there. Like, how would you respond to a friend if they were like, oh my gosh, I said something really stupid in this circle and I sounded like a complete idiot? What would you say to them?
Well, I would probably say that's too bad. That's really too bad. I'm so sorry. I'm sure it's not as bad as you think. But the thing is, right, when someone tells you that in this moment, there's nothing yeah, you can say to make them
that's
think.
That's true.
So you can't say, girl, no, you didn't. Right. Like, you know, just like, oh no, but it's not the end of the world. You're not, did you die?
Yeah.
No, you're still here and you know, it'll be fine.
Right. You can offer words of comfort to a certain extent, but you also just have to recognize that that emotion has to move through you and that this messiness mm-hmm. is part of the process. So that's another place where like perfectionism will come into our personal development process and tell us that we always have to be confident. We always have to like get rid of quote unquote negative emotions. And a really important part here that I didn't get a chance to express in the beginning is that especially in the self-help world, we talk a lot about like being positive and being grateful and always being happy. And like, that's a bunch of bullshit. Our uncomfortable emotions are actually there for a reason. They're evolutionarily adaptive. They were there to protect us. They're there to help us to procreate. They're there to help us connect. And so we're primed to be really uncomfortable with emotions like humiliation, rejection, loneliness, shame, because at one point that prevented us from dying, right? Now, this is a different situation. If you feel humiliated in your book group, it's not, you're probably not going to like end up isolated and die because you can't like kill the tiger on the savannah to eat for dinner, right? Like, this is a very different situation. But those emotions are still really uncomfortable. So part of working with perfectionism is not, again, trying to avoid these experiences of rejection, humiliation, shame, loneliness, anxiety, frustration, whatever. It's about learning how to cope with them. So for you, mm-hmm. like, what do you imagine would be helpful for you if you were to experience, like, if that were inevitable?
Well,
instead
of just asking more okay. questions. Yeah. I just want to point out here that what's been more consistent in what you're saying is that, and what we see when we understand perfectionism, is that it's directly related to self-perception. And it sounds like, despite the fact that you could be considered, if the right person were looking at it, a phenom, a prodigy, somebody who's gotten where she shouldn't have been in these rooms without even trying, without putting in the work or time, you literally did that, right? Like, you're saying you don't feel like you belong there, but you're in the house. Now what? But the way you see it is like, you're not honoring your early stages, the fact that what you have accomplished got you there quicker than you expected. You are not honoring that. And you see still yourself as a small person fighting your way in the room. When people are looking around, they're like, what does she have that got her in it? They see what you don't see and what you aren't allowing yourself to honor and flourish. Right? And anytime you see, what does that feel like?
This is different. I've never had this problem like this before. And it's also because I've never had such early success at anything. I've never had real success like this before. Mm. And so I don't know what it feels like to be, you know, to revel in
yes.
accolades, because I've really never gotten them before this, you know.
And so see, that's the thing. It's like what Megan said earlier. Yeah. It's like the difference between expectations and reality. You weren't expecting to do so well.
No, I wasn't. I mean, I wasn't. But I knew that I was gonna try my hardest. And when I work hard, I tend to do pretty well.
Well, I just want exactly, and I want to sit with you because you did work hard and you earned it. But that's a very realistic thing that a lot of people wouldn't say out loud. Like, I didn't expect to be this successful. And I can enjoy it because I think I don't deserve it, despite the fact that I mm-hmm. earned it. And that's like a pretty big conflict. The reason you feel stress and anxiety is because that's a big conflict. Like, you wanted mm-hmm. success. You got it yeah. quicker than you thought, and you can't enjoy it.
I have certain aspects of it, but I don't, you know, I feel like
you're on the path.
And it's also like, it's interesting because we often think of perfectionism, a fear of a failure, right? But there's also a fear of success in there.
And so, absolutely.
So like, because when we have these expectations on ourselves, and again, we have this more precarious self-worth, there's a belief like, oh shit, the bar has been raised, eyes are on me, I feel that much more vulnerable, and I have to perform. Exactly, I feel exposed.
That's it. I mean, and that's how, that's what happens. You do well, and you need your next book to do better, and you know, I mean, like, that's, yes, absolutely, you can't really enjoy it, because you know that, you know, it's such a visible and public, everyone can see what your book is doing,
and you have
what people check
right. Right. And so much further to fall, right? Now the bar's been raised, I could fall far from here. And so, I mean, that's a huge part of this as well. And a huge part of why people self-sabotage and why they keep themselves small and why they don't speak up and why they don't go after, like, you know, things being bigger and building and growing and stuff like that. So I imagine there's some conflict there for you that, like, maybe we won't have time to fully discuss today, but that you might want to unpack, right? Around like, what would it be like if I actually achieve this success, and what does that look like, and what scares me about that, and where does it leave me vulnerable to judgment or criticism or humiliation or these feelings that I'm feeling? B, do you have anything there before I keep going, or I just want to make sure you're feeling
Check in with her. How does that sound?
Some of these questions you're asking are questions I've never asked myself, and, you know, so I'll have some food for thought, and I will definitely use it. So anyway.
Well, Penny, thank you so much. We hope this was helpful, and thank you for being so open with us.
Thank you for inviting me. What what a serendipitous, you know, thing this was, and I really enjoyed it. Y'all are amazing and inspiring, and, you know, just, you know, it takes real courage to be, you know, to really, you know, like, think about yourself, you know, in a larger context. So, you know, thank y'all for, for inviting me.
Thank you for having this conversation, Penny. And just if I can leave you with thing, just give yourself permission to feel like an imposter. Like, you don't judge yourself for feeling like an imposter. Give yourself permission to do that.
Okay.
And then you can actually create the space to start unpacking it and asking some more of those questions that Bea and myself mentioned.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
welcome.
Penny. Go forth and be great. Go forth and be the change.
Y'all do.
Hi, Penny.
All right. Bye. Thanks. Bye, guys. Bye.
That, I mean, you get three perfectionists on a call and no light bulb screwed in. I hope at least one went off. I had a bunch going off at different times, but that's so real.
Yeah.
I mean, like, literally, as both of y'all were talking, I'm like, yep. This was a very personal issue for me because, like, like, we all work really hard. And so I hope that anybody who's listening who is really hard on themselves, just recognize it comes from a good place. Where this started, where this extreme overreaction to, like, perceived slights and failures comes from, is that it started because you loved yourself, you love what you do, and you hold it to a really high standard.
Yeah, you have integrity.
That's where the pure essence of it, all that other stuff that tells you it's not doing enough, remember, hold yourself to a high standard. And that includes ethics, where we don't distract or discourage the champion when they're fighting for their goals. So remember, it's about high standards, not like failed goals, people watching you, letting you down.
High standards and then high support alongside that. So that's the place where, as perfectionists, we tend to be the more like authoritarian parent to ourselves, where we have high expectations but low support. We want to be more into that authoritative realm where we're like high expectations but also high support. So through changing that critical inner voice to a more compassionate voice where we're more supportive to ourselves and we are able to be with our emotional discomfort as a result, and we have more realistic expectations that are flexible. And so we know that, like, if we encounter something that feels really anxiety provoking, we can actually adjust our expectations to make them, make sure that they're realistic. And we put our self-worth into things that are more sustainable rather than like outcomes, achievements, appearance. We're more equipped to deal with the inevitable discomfort that life brings our way, and then we're fucking invincible. Once you realize you can be with discomfort, you can do anything.
That's true. Nothing hurts anymore. None of y'all can hurt my feelings. It's still, because life has crushed me.
And it still hurts. It still hurts, but we know how to be with that, and we know that it will pass. It's impermanent, you know, that it will come and go, and we can support ourselves or find support until that moment happens and practice mindfulness through it. So
well, for any other aspiring perfect people out there with perfect people problems, you know where I got that from? Remember the Jersey Shore, which is now in its like reboot season?
No,
they used to go meatball problems. I love that show. I fucking love Snooki. And they go meat and Dina. They are moms now and they go meatball problems. Yeah. So that's why this is called perfect people problems. You have to say it with me. I thought you were
going
to
say it. Oh, sorry. I'm just like.
So on this episode of perfect people problems. I hope you learned that it doesn't have to be a problem. You know, it really starts with self-compassion, starts with self-understanding and awareness. So for anybody who's being too hard on yourself, and like, if you have the self-imposed pressure and then you also have the external pressure, like, don't let the world do that and don't let yourself do that.
Yeah, and I would say too, for anyone who's held back and thinks, oh, if I'm not hard on myself, I won't be successful, it's actually the opposite. Mm. When you start to be more supportive to yourself, like that coach that still has high expectations but high support, you can acquire skills that you wouldn't have done before because you were afraid of failure. So you're able to actually grow your comfort zone, grow your skill set, and do things that scare you, and then become that much more competent as a result, and elevate your career, elevate your relationships, like go after the goals that fear is holding you back from.
Well, this was great, Megan. How can people find you to get more of this excellent advice?
Well, I mean, I think like realistic expectations for myself, Instagram is really the only platform that I'm like somewhat regular on.
What's your real Insta?
My real Insta is Megan, MeganJBruneau. So Megan J. Bruno. But I'm on like, you know, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook.
And you have a website?
Email. Yes, my website is just MeganBruneau.com, MeganBruneau.com.
Canadian fish.
Yeah, you're.
Thank you so much for joining us. Audience, thank you so much for joining us. It's not about being perfect. It's about being good to yourself. We like to call this the Power Hour. For your own Power Hour, make sure you sign up at The Difference. Till next time. This is the Be the Change podcast, recorded at Sonos Studios in New York City. Thanks for listening.